Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining me today. My name is Chrissy Hodges. I am the host of Mental Illness Matters here at Blog Talk Radio. I have had a little bit of trouble calling in today, and so trying to get on by 9, and so apologies for that. But today we have a really exciting show. I mean, it's not exciting, but it's an exciting topic because it's something that definitely needs to be talked about more and something that's hugely stigmatized. Before I bring on my guest host, just a little bit about me. If this is the first time you've tuned into Mental Illness Matters, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully that you'll follow the show and also that you'll share it with people who this information may be relevant to. One of the things about mental illness and addiction is that it can be very isolating and very, very lonely for someone who's going through it, not to mention all the emotions that go along with it, like shame and embarrassment and guilt. So in most people's recovery, a key component are peers and finding people who understand, finding people who can empathize and not judge. It is very important to have those people in your recovery in order for you to be successful and move over those huge boundaries that you will, the huge hurdles that you encounter during your recovery. This is a topic that we have not talked about much today on the show, which is addiction. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me tell you about who I am and what I'm doing and why this. So my name is Chrissy Hodges, and I am a mental health advocate. I have lived experience with mental illness and suicide attempts. I live successfully with obsessive compulsive disorder. I've experienced clinical depression, and I now live in recovery. What does that mean? Living in recovery means that it doesn't mean that OCD is completely dormant. It's something that I live with every single day. I see it every single day. However, I've learned the tools to be able to manage it and live a life that is not controlled by my mental illness. That's what most everyone who has an illness is striving to do. Unfortunately, there are so many things that get in the way. I do this show. I've been doing it for a couple of years now, and I also am a public speaker, and I work with an OCD specialist here in Denver with patients with OCD, as well as for a company here in Denver that works with people with major mental illness and addiction as a peer support specialist. And my job is to use my lived experience to support individuals who are working toward recovery. That's who I am, and now I'm going to bring on my guest host for the day, and I'm going to have her tell a bit about who she is. Welcome to the show, Margaret.
Thank you, Chrissy. I am Margaret Sisson. I am a mother of a son who I tragically lost 8 months ago to OCD and addiction. So this topic that we're going to discuss today is close to my heart. I walked that journey with my son, with both addiction and OCD, and it's addiction, and like Christy and I will talk about, is a big part of mental health, that self-medication part, component of it. So that's who I am.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say to my listeners that there is some discrepancy out there about whether or not to lump mental illness and addiction into the same category. There's also a lot of people don't feel like others are qualified to be peers, mentors, things like that to individuals if they have not had an addiction themselves. But slowly, those things, all of those things that I look at as not true are kind of getting left behind as we're moving forward in this movement for mental health and addiction. I believe personally, and, you know, Margaret, I'm sure you agree, and this is something that George Brock is really passionate about, is that if you've experienced anything, anything that you experience, any sort of trauma, absolutely qualifies you to be able to meet people where they are, whether or not you understand what it's like to have an addiction or not. What do you think, Margaret?
Yes, I agree. I think once you, whether you've lived it yourself or you've lived it with a loved one, and I'll first gracious say, you know, I don't put myself as an expert. I'm a mother that journeyed for many, many years. And through that journey, I met many, many people who helped me understand addiction and OCD and helped my son. So not as an expert, but just real life experiences is what I bring.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what you think. I mean, I have plenty of thoughts on this. Tell me what you think the biggest obstacle is for people who have an addiction problem and why it is that they stay silent. What's the, in essence, that perpetuates the negative side of addiction and actually keeps them in that addiction cycle. What is the thing that keeps them silent?
Well, I think it's just like mental health, which hopefully we're breaking some ground on that with the stigma. Addiction, there is a huge stigma to addiction, but it is a disease. If you look at the research, someone with addiction's brain, and you know, my Riley would be the first to show you that research, because there is a difference in the brain's, how the brain is from an addict's brain is different. And, you know, I listen to Riley's AA story often and listen to him talk about the actual science of it, and there is a difference. But there's such a stigma because people think it's the, and what a stigma this is too, that it's the homeless person, and that's such a stigma. I struggle with that too. Or it's the college student. You know, our colleges today are rampant with young people struggling with addiction. And they're dying left and right. And it's a disease that we have to address. And we, you know, I so struggle with that because I see these young people that are struggling. And, you know, there's a couple programs, and there are a couple, and I'm from Georgia, that they've started a counseling recovery center that helps young students in college that are struggling with addiction, and how they are peer support, counseling, and they go out and they help other people, because I think that is key. But there's so few of them. To me, it should be in every college. Every college.
Right.
But that's where we have to make a change because, you know, and look at, you know, the fraternities. We have closed our eyes and or turned our head the other way because maybe it's the football game, which brings a lot of money, and I'm not, you know, I love football, but let's look at what's going on in our schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrendous. And the sad thing is young people are dying. And I'll guarantee you that many of them are struggling with a mental health issue. So what is an easier way to cover that up? And as my son, Riley, make those thoughts go away is to drown yourself. Whether it be alcohol or pills or worse. So let's address it. Let's don't hide it under the thinking that that's just kids. No, it's not. It's a disease.
Absolutely. And I definitely want to talk about the homeless part of it. But I do want to bring up another demographic that, you know, we're talking about colleges, we're talking about people that are in the homeless population. How about prescription drugs? This is something that I mean, people who, I believe that, you know, a lot of the arguments about against addiction come from, oh, well, addiction isn't an illness. It's not a disease. It's just somebody's weak. It's just that people are lazy. It's just that they don't want to deal with their problems, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, those same people, probably their neighbors, are addicted to prescription drugs.
Exactly, exactly.
It is so mismanaged, the way that people get in an accident, people get injured, people can't sleep, and then they're prescribed these horrible drugs, and they completely get addicted to them.
Yes, and it happens every day, and doctors are prescribing it like candy. And young kids, you know, they get their wisdom teeth out. First thing they do, they're on pain pills and hard stuff. And these young college kids that are athletes in injury, immediately they put them on pain medicine, and that's what's happening. So we need to look at our the medical profession and what we're doing.
Right. I know. And just warning people. I think that when we think about addicts, we think about street drugs, and we think about alcohol. You know, not these narcotics that people are getting prescribed, and a lot of times shoving up their nose or whatever. I mean, these are the things I think that need a lot of attention. Now,
yes.
Let me tell a quick story. So I thought this was really interesting, and it's addressing something that you said earlier about the mental health and the mental health and the addiction piece. So I work in a drop-in center here in Denver, and for a while we were having a lot of incidents, and, you know, cops would come by, and, you know, just because there was a disturbance maybe in the community around us, or you know, we just needed their assistance. And so I was having a conversation with a cop here, and he started talking about, you know, he asked me what I was doing. I said, oh, whatever, I'm this, I'm that, I have a mental illness. And he looked at me like, wow, oh, you have a mental illness. And I said, well, yeah, I don't look like the average person that would have a mental illness and or admit it. so he said, we started talking about alcohol, I think whatever was happening was related to alcohol consumption, whatever had happened. And so he said something like, well, you know, it's just that, something along the lines of, you know, they develop these mental illnesses because of all the drugs that they're doing. And I was like, what? And he said, well, yeah, I mean, it's just that, you know, whatever, they're in this culture, and then they get sick because of the drugs. And I was like, no. I was like, no. I mean, you know, perhaps drug use is, you know, could be a trigger or could be something. But the dual diagnosis is typically exactly what Margaret said, is, you know, people get hit with these hardcore mental illnesses, and there's no escape. You can't escape your brain. You can't jump out of your brain and take a break from it, and breathe and relax. Like, I believe Riley even said that at one point. He was like, there is no escape. And I said this at his service, is that you can't go home from a really hard day with a mental illness, put your feet up, you know, pour a glass of wine and be like, whew, that was a doozy. Let me just escape for a few minutes. It doesn't work like that.
So I think that
right there showed me what people really, really think. That a lot of these people on the streets, a lot of people that grew up in that environment, they just go right into drugs. And all of a sudden, oh, what? Now they have schizophrenia. Now they're hearing voices because they're so into drugs, street drugs and alcohol. And I was like, no. It is the exact opposite. For most people, it is, they are coping and dealing with these mental illnesses, which, by the way, they do not have the service and the resources that people like you and I, Margaret, have. Mm-hmm. And and they're coping the best way that they can, not to mention their environment is just saturated with drugs. It was just a very enlightening moment to think, if police officers don't understand this concept, like, we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of ground to cover. And I wasn't saying this guy was ignorant or stupid. I just was like, wow, I'm glad that I had the opportunity to talk to you and let you know what really is going on here. I mean, mental illness is not born out of addiction. It is,
right.
I mean, typically it's the other way around.
Right. And can I ask that question? I mean, and maybe that's a question we can all, is there scientific proof that someone who is an addict and takes drugs, like, and really, you know, hardcore drugs, does that change the brain? And I'm just asking.
Meaning if
not that it causes, but, you know, somebody that, you know, I mean, let's just say somebody that did acid on a
right.
regular basis, does that change their brain to act more like they have mental health issues? Does that make sense?
Yes. I think that, you know, since I'm not an expert, it's, you know, I could definitely be talking off the cuff and none of anything I'm about to say is true. But the way that I look at mental illness and my belief system about mental illness is the same with physical illness. Typically, these diseases, you're predispositioned to get them
right.
or to not get them. And so,
right.
you know, Bobby over here could do acid all through his high school and college career, you know, and Sarah over here could, but one of them is predispositioned to get bipolar
health.
Or
yeah.
to have OCD or
right.
schizophrenia, and the drugs could be a trigger for that.
Or exacerbate it.
To happen?
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I don't know. That would be a good question for us to look up.
Yeah, we'll research that, and I think that
yeah,
would be
I'll write it down.
An interesting topic. Yeah, write that down, and we'll research that one.
Drugs can alter. Because, you know, I remember even hearing that when I was, oh, my gosh, when I was younger and had a mental illness and didn't know it. But, you know, in order to scare me and my friends away from doing drugs, it would always be these acid trips can change your life forever and you have flashbacks. Now, I totally believe that that is possible, but, I mean, okay, so look at that. If you engaged in acid and you have a bad trip and you're having flashbacks, I mean, that right there is PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. Yeah,
but,
and that's an interesting topic because, and I say that too, for me growing up, you know, that was that a wife's day? You know, I heard that often. You know, if you do drugs, it'll make you crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that, you know. So that would be, that's
I typically heard
thing.
That from people in the church, though.
Well, that too, yeah. That's another topic.
Scare you away. It'll alter your brain and Jesus will be angry with you. I was like, whoa, double whammy.
Oh.
No drugs for me.
And yeah, well, and that's, you know what, and I remember Ethan saying he was so terrified of drugs. That's why he never did drugs, because of his OCD kept him from that.
Right.
And Riley used to say, huh, I didn't have that because, you know, addiction is so powerful, so powerful.
Yes.
And when your brain, and I believe your brain is wired different as an addict.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's maybe another thing we could show some research of that, because people don't believe it. They just feel like it's a choice. Well, you choose. But I think there's scientific research that that shows as an addict your brain is different. So think about that.
I'm writing this
and
down. I'm writing it down.
Okay. Then your brain's wired differently as an addict, and then your brain's wired different with mental health issues. Combine those two. And
it's
see
definitely.
how difficult it is to function on the day to day. And of course I can say with Riley, who I lost him at 25, but wow, how courageous and how brave that he did that, and despite that did some incredible things. So there's a lot of people out there that struggle with that and still do great things. And I find that, you know, not a stigma to them. Wow. Proud of you. And you're brave and you're courageous. And let's
talk to them. I want to get somebody to come on the next time we're on, Margaret, and join our conversation. So, somebody that lives successfully with addiction or is in recovery with addiction, so they can kind of contribute too. Because I know you know you've lived it as a support. I've been a support to people, like, but I think it would be really cool to have a third person who can kind of share their perspective. I'll work on getting somebody in here the next time we.
The next time
we have the show.
Ideas on that. Yeah, I've got some ideas of some people that could help with that.
So let's talk about this. I think the thing that drives me the craziest is just the rampant view that people who are addicts are lazy and weak, and that they don't go get adequate help. Just stop drinking. I can't stand that the most. It's like telling somebody who suffers with an eating disorder, anorexia, just go eat a hamburger. Oh, I can't stand that.
Thanks.
Stop throwing
up.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we have this image, I think, as a society that when people are addicts, yes, they're standing on the corner of the street, they're begging for change, and they're going to the liquor store, and they're buying booze. Now, hey, I am not going to argue that that isn't what's going on, that a lot of people live on the streets, are addicts. However, most people who, you know, talk a lot of crap about people who are homeless don't know a lot about the homeless population. I'm not even going to get into that now because...
I've been working with people
in the homeless population, and I don't know. I don't have a lot of tolerance anymore for people's ignorant viewpoints on homelessness, So, which I used to have too, but luckily now those have changed a little bit.
It's all about educating yourself. It's all about educating, and that's what we're talking about. It's raising awareness and educating yourself about this because there were so many things I didn't know. Addiction would be the first to think, you know, until I lived it and I educated myself, I learned. So to me, that's, you know, that's what people, if they want to take the time, that's what they need to do.
And it's that we're not just talking about addiction either with, oh, here's another topic. I have like 18 things that I think we could talk about today, but I forget we're going to be talking again in a couple of weeks. So it's not just the substance abuse addiction. It's also gambling addiction. It's also sex addiction.
It's also
these other addictions that people don't even believe exist. They just, you know, think that sex addiction is some people are just crazed and sex crazed and they just can't control their male parts or female parts. But I mean, it is an actual breakdown in your brain. I remember when I first heard about sex addiction, I believe it was in college, and like how everybody burst out laughing in the classroom. I mean, if you've ever met anyone that has a sex addiction and talked to them, it is heartbreaking. It's painful to listen to.
It's painful, and it's horrendous, just like any other addiction. People don't think that the person who struggles with addiction likes it. it's a miserable existence. Horrible.
That is the best point ever. Right there. Right there.
Hmm?
People who have it don't like it.
Oh, it's horrible.
It's horrible.
They would change it for anything.
I'm going to write that down. So, I mean, just to elaborate on that, it's so I don't want to get off the topic of substance abuse, but like the sex addict part, I had a conversation yesterday actually with a therapist friend of mine about it. And like the misconception in there, just like substance abuse and stuff, is that those people, all they want is sex. All they want, that's all they want to think about, and it's just pleasurable, pleasurable, pleasurable. Well, the flip side of that is when you have an addiction, an unhealthy addiction to something, it would be like, he was telling a story about, basically a guy whose marriage was falling apart because he had this addiction to porn. And he could not stop it, and it wasn't pleasurable. It wasn't like, oh, I can't, you know, I'm going to go on to, I'm just going to go watch porn because I can't wait and I'm excited about it. It was, I have to do this to satisfy the urge in my brain that had switched. It's like the, you know, the hot switch went on, and it's, I can't turn this off unless I do this, and you lose everything. And it's the same with alcohol. And I was talking to someone one time about this, about how it was, you know, if you know, listeners, if you drink alcohol, you know, I drink alcohol, Margaret, you know, drinks a glass of wine a night, whatever, and, you know, it is. You go home, you know, you have a glass of wine, it's like, like turns the cool light on, like, okay, just download a little bit. It's pleasurable, and it's something that you can go, oh, look, this is good, now I'm relaxed. People who have addiction, it is to fight the urge to drink, it's so difficult, and then it's not even pleasurable once you do it. It's like, okay, now
and
here,
then you can't,
now here
and then
we go,
can't
and this
stop.
Is miserable.
Then their brain won't let them stop. And, you know, I say that with Riley. I remember so often that how with addiction, it was so torturous for him because addiction caused him to hurt people that he loved, and that was his worst, that was his worst OCD fear, and his whole being, he was so kind and loved people, so it was so torturous, because when you're an addict, you do things, you whether you cheat, you lie, you hurt people, and it tortured him. Hated it. So anybody thinks that addiction is, you know, people choose it. No, they don't. No, they don't.
Right. Tell me a little bit about, this is another thing, is that, you know, people, it's stigmatized and people dismiss people with addictions because of things like lying, stealing, things of that nature, you know, people deem those actions as wrong, and so therefore when people are doing them, they must just think that, oh, those people are just evil people because they're doing these wrong things, and then it's to feed an addiction, et cetera. Let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about the lying aspect, the stealing aspect, and how helpless people feel when they're put in the position of how to do that. Do you have any stories or any examples of kind of what I'm talking about?
For the addict's perspective or for for the family member?
Both, I guess.
Well, I mean, for the addict's perspective, I remember if, because maybe it would be desperate to have money for alcohol or, so an addict will do anything trying to get that relief. And then, but once they've done it, they hate themselves. So it becomes this vicious, vicious cycle because their brain, it becomes so hard to stop. And then when they do it, oh, my gosh, they feel horrendous. So it just, and each time it gets worse and worse. And the things that they do, I mean, I know with my example with Riley, and I remember saying, that's not my Riley. That's mm-hmm. not my Riley. Because I knew, and I knew. And when he'd be sober, it just tortured him what he'd done.
Right.
And I guess, you know, and some people, a lot of people have done very well with either AA or NA, and that it's great for some people don't, but I mean, I just say that with Riley, you know, that was one of the steps, was then to give up, and to apologize to anybody that they'd hurt, and what a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that gave, I remember, that gave him some sense of peace, being able to do that, because it tortured him.
Yeah.
He hated it, hated it.
I think that's I think my point of saying that was, people get tired of, you know, people don't understand, well, why would you just lie? Why would you? Well, first of all, because people aren't proud of having an addiction. It's not something that you're proud of. It actually brings such shame and embarrassment, but then having to do things to get that relief. So I liked what you said. I wrote it down. You do anything to get the relief. It just, you feel horrible because you realize you're controlled by something other than yourself. I mean, I look at addiction the same way that I look at mental illness. It's like a monster mm-hmm. that lives inside of you. Mm-hmm. It's like a hand that comes down on your brain and basically squeezes your brain and says, okay, you're going to do whatever I tell you to do. And mm-hmm. you have to do this in order to get relief. And it's torturous. Mm-hmm. It's tormenting,
and
that's what people don't understand.
Yeah, and in your case of OCD, just over and over and over and over and over that thought.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with Riley. Over and over and over, it tortured him. And he hated hurting people. And, you know, I remember listening to his AA story, how he said, he had lied and he had cheated and he stole, and how that was so horrendous for him. And then when he told his story, he had been clean for almost 2 years, and how he said, people didn't even want me in their home. People didn't trust me. And how horrible, horrible that made him feel. And then he said, now people are asking me to talk, and people are asking me to talk at the OCD conference. And my mom says she's proud of me, which I always said I was proud of me no matter what. But to think that's, you know, that stigma, because he was sick, but he knew
mm-hmm.
people, that's what people thought of him. And how horrible that is to live with that, because he didn't want to be like that. So it's
mm-hmm.
a disease, just like cancer.
Yeah. I think that's a big issue is, you know, I make this comparison all the time. I make it all the time is, you know, if you have a loved one and they have a physical ailment, you know, they have diabetes, they have cancer, it is just as equivalent for you to say to somebody, why can't you just not drink? Why can't you just not do this? You would be saying to that person, why can't you just, you know, why can't you just make your pancreas work right? Why can't you just, why can't you just get rid of that cancer? Don't give in to it. Oh, that's the,
mm-hmm.
that would be, just don't give in to the cancer.
Right.
Okay?
Don't give in to it.
I mean,
yeah. Don't give in to it.
So the point that, you know, if you, I mean, for me, Margaret's made some excellent points, but for me, like, the point I want to make is if you walk away from this podcast with anything, hate the disease, the person. Like, when someone is in an addiction cycle, you're not dealing with the authentic person that you know. You're dealing with their disease.
Right.
So stop making
them feel bad.
I mean, stop making them think that there's something wrong with their character.
Right.
It's a disease.
It is a disease.
Talk to the disease. Hate the disease, not the person.
Right, and help them with the disease instead of stigmatizing it. And, you know, I think Riley felt it, you know, even at the, that people gave up on him and didn't like him. And, you know, he felt horrible. and what a sad way. How many people live that? You know, and so reach out to them. Hold them accountable.
Yeah.
But help them.
And I think that's another misconception, Margaret, is that people think, and I mean, I may just be repeating something you said earlier, is that people definitely treat addicts like what they do is they want to do it. And so it's just, you know, so people create or make the shame worse. It's that, you know, they already feel like crap. People who have addiction issues, just like mental illness, you already feel horrible about what you're dealing with. You don't want it. You probably wish that you had anybody else's life. But, you know, it's important to understand that the addict does not want to do the things that they're doing. If they can change it, if there's a magic pill, because that addiction, oops. But if there's like a magic wand that can say, okay, you don't have this addiction anymore, oh my God, the 99.99999% of addicts, I bet, would jump on it. They don't want the problem any more than you don't want it. So I think that this is an important understanding and distinction to make, and what that I would say a majority of our society does not understand.
Right. I remember Riley saying, and it's always stuck in my head, he said, I would have my leg cut off in a heartbeat if I could take away OCD and addiction. I would take it.
Wow.
I would do it in a heartbeat. And I thought, wow. And I said, oh, Riley, come on. And he said, in a heartbeat. So how powerful that statement is. And I remember reading a young man, and I think it was, and that's how Dr. Jenicky got so involved with OCD, because the young man struggled with cancer and OCD, and he said, I would take the cancer in a heartbeat if the OCD would go away.
Oh.
And Dr. Jenicky thought, how powerful, and how that, you know, that's how bad OCD is. And so that's how Riley was, addiction and OCD, mental health and addiction.
Why do you think that?
Just think about that, you know. Don't think that they want that. Don't think that they do that for a reason, that they want to do that. They want to hurt people or steal. Or it's a disease.
Do you think those statements just sum everything up right there. I would take a physical ailment any day just to make this stuff go away. Now, I know that probably if I were battling cancer, I would probably think to myself, oh, I would take this over that any day. But I don't think that people have to feel that way with physical ailments.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's compounded by the stigma that people think that? Or is
it just
illness in general?
I mean, and as a family member, I remember thinking with Riley, because there was such a stigma to it, you know, did people call me and bring dishes or, you know, that doesn't happen because there's such a stigma to it. and nobody talked about it, and it so it made me feel bad, and Lord knows what it did to Riley, because, like I said, if he'd had cancer, you know, I would have had, you know, I would have had notes every day, and I say that now that I've lost Riley, I have people that still send me notes, encouragement uh-huh. notes, and how, you know, and those are some special people. But if it'd been cancer, you know, that would have been a whole different ballgame.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I just want to toss out some ideas on what we can do and what listeners can do. It seems like we have a longer way to go with addiction than mental illness, and that just breaks my heart. But what are some things that we can start doing now individually? And people might think to themselves, well, I don't have addiction, and I don't know anybody that has addiction, which you'd be wrong.
Yeah, the people, because I'll guarantee
the people you least expect.
Body with addiction. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and that's individually, if people can reach out and help people and say, you know what, and even say, you know, I don't understand it, but help me understand it. And you'll be amazed at, if you reach out to somebody, let them talk to you about it, because the stigma of it, but if you reach out and say, you know, I don't understand, but I'm here for you, wow, you can make a huge change for somebody.
And also, I think another huge stigma is that when people find out that people have been addicts, or they're, you know, because addicts use in recovery a lot as well, too, I think that a lot of times people dismiss them and go, oh, well, I don't want to get close to them. You can't trust an addict.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yep.
I can't stand that statement, and it's so unfair, but I've heard it so much when I tell people what I do and what the population that I work with, that's a huge response that I get from people. Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
You can't trust the addicts. You never know with them. Well, I mean, would you ever say that from someone who has had a physical ailment and, you know, and they are in recovery or in remission? Well, you know, you can't trust those cancers because, you know, it might come back one day, and I just don't want to be a part of it. Really?
Really? Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the same way. I mean, it's, first of all, it's, you know, when you have any sort of illness and you overcome it, or you're in remission or recovery from it, any sort, physical, mental, anything, the chances of it coming back are probably stronger for you since you've already been through it once. So, yeah, if I have a friend that's an addict and, you know, and they're in recovery or remission, there's absolutely a chance that they're going to backslide or relapse. But why mm-hmm. would you deny a friendship with someone? Why would you deny the opportunity to be in a relationship with someone just because they went through that and you're scared?
And that person, the more support and understanding and help, you will help them stay in remission or what, you know. When you make someone feel bad and hide, well, the most they need is help and support.
Mm-hmm.
Just
so
like
I think
if they had cancer or diabetes, you know,
exactly.
If you're with them and they're, you know, eating sugar and da-da-da, well, you help them. You know, you talk
right.
to them and you help them. I would. I mean, that's, you know, that's the right thing to do.
So how do we start changing? What are some ways that we and listeners can, what can we do to start talking about it or changing it, or, you know, like I always try to say when I'm doing speeches, is to become an advocate, even if you don't understand it, let people know that you're someone that they can go to. You know, what can we do?
It's educating. I think you have to educate yourself, because once you educate yourself about it, whether it be addiction or mental health, you become an advocate and you understand. I think that is the key. And so many people don't understand. But, you know, with OCD, how many, you and Tim made such a difference at Riley's service because you educated.
Mm-hmm.
And people, and I have so many people that say, oh, I hear people say, oh, I'm so OCD. And now they step in and say, no, let me tell you really what OCD is. And
mm-hmm.
now they're out educating. So,
right.
Huge.
So I think it's more of, we have to each change individually and share with people stories. I mean, I still don't see a lot of, you know, Margaret and I are hugely involved in advocacy and post things on Facebook and do stuff like that, but you still don't see a lot of people who are addicts, you know, posting their stories because it's so shameful and so embarrassing.
Yeah.
And people don't want other people to know that that's what they've been through, probably because they feel so, again, so guilty when they don't have they have no reason to feel guilty.
No, and that's why, they go to AA and they go to NA, and that's where they can tell their story in confidence because people will support them and love them, but because there's such a stigma to it.
Yeah.
And even, well, I mean, and mental health, I think mental health really has a little more step up that people can tell their story, and I think telling your story is very healing,
mm-hmm.
whether it be mental health or addiction. But no, I think people with addiction do it, tell their story secretly within their support group of AA or NA because of the stigma.
Mm-hmm. And the idea that, just like I said earlier, is that people, you know, they're probably afraid if people find out they were an addict.
How would their employer judge them? How would their mother-in-law judge them? There's that stigma.
So addiction is in the DSM, is that right?
Addiction is what?
It's in the DSM-5, right? The new diagnostic manual?
You know what? That's a good question, Chrissy. That's a good question. I'm not sure. I'll educate myself on that, though.
I'm about to look it up right now.
Okay. I think that's, because...
It is, actually.
Okay.
Because this year they actually... They included sex addiction and gambling addiction this year.
Okay.
Ew, and I actually think, I heard this, but I don't want to have to look it up because it'll probably take forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I heard that they included, like, I don't know what they call it. I don't want to say, like, electronic addiction, but, you know, the addiction to online and stuff like that. I can't remember
mm-hmm.
what they called it. So technically, addiction is a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know why that people are so reluctant to not say that it is, you know, that like people try to keep them separate, addiction and mental illness. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if there's just still such a stigma to the addiction, because I think in addiction that such a part of our life, our social life, is drinking. And so some people can drink. So it's, you know, it's intertwined with how we, a lot of us live our day to day. And so I think that's where, you know, people say, oh, well, I can just have one glass of wine. Well, an addict can't. So I think that's
right.
The difference. So people think, well, you're weak. Why can't you do that?
Yeah. Or just stop. You know, just have that next glass of wine.
Right.
I had a guy on here a couple years ago who came on, and I need to get him on the show again. He's so awesome. Maybe I'll get him to come on with us next time. George, and he is in recovery from alcohol, and this was kind of one of the first times I'd ever really learned about addiction. I had that viewpoint too. I was like, addicts are weak, this or that. I mean, hell, I have a mental illness. It just goes to show you that until you're educated, you just don't know. And he came on and something clicked with me, and that's when I understood what it meant. He said, Chrissy, addicts can't, or I said something like, oh, you know, so, yeah, you just get drunk every night or something. I was a pretty bad interviewer back then. he said, Chrissy, it's not about getting drunk when you're an addict. He said, no, it wasn't every night. He said, but there are different levels and there are different types of addiction. And these are things I didn't know and I didn't understand. And he said, you know, I would drink and then I would need some days to recover because I had drank so much. And he said, you don't just get drunk and there you are. He said, you drink until you can't drink anymore, meaning till you throw up, till you pass out.
You pass out.
Or until you're in jail. And I was like, nuh-uh. I was so stupid back then. And he was like, no, he said, you have an inability to stop.
Right.
And that's when it clicked for me. So I just said, okay, well, give me examples. And he was like, oh, I'll give you examples. He was like, I would drink until I black out. Mm-hmm. I got sick. And then, of course, you know, how I feel about throwing up. And he was like, sometimes I'd get sick and then keep drinking.
Right.
And it something clicked inside of me. I was like, oh, you can't stop. It's not like you're just drinking to get drunk. And he was like,
no.
You can't stop.
Right. No. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Your brain does something, and you can, I mean, I remember Riley saying, till you passed out, and then you didn't remember. And and he would say, you know, one was fine. Well, 1,000 wasn't enough. So.
Oh, that, you know, that reminds me of, how he talks about doing compulsions for OCD. It's like, like the first reaction, you have to resist altogether, because if you give in once, you're going to give in 1,000 times.
Yeah. And that's the same with addiction.
So I guess, one of the important points that just kind of help, that just talking about that comes to mind is, if you're a support to an addict, which the support system is just as important as a support team, like a psychiatrist and AA and everything, is being a support to an addict is to support the person to not give in the first time and not make people feel weak. I guess it's hard to be able to articulate what that would be like for someone who doesn't understand addiction, who hasn't seen it firsthand. It's people who are addicts, just like people who have mental illness, the relapse rate is humongous. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the important
mm-hmm.
thing is to support that person. No matter what, if they are going to relapse, you know, maybe once, though, or maybe not, maybe once, maybe 100 times, is to understand how it works, not to judge the person and say, God, if you could only do this, if you could only be like this, then you wouldn't have that, this problem.
Right.
To support, well, and so that's, to support the person to not give in once.
Yeah, you support the person, not the addiction. And you help the person, you don't enable. And that's hard. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard.
Right.
It's hard not to be angry. It's hard not to, you know, I lived it. But you have to support the person because you got to know that they really do not want to be, this is miserable for them. It's horrible
mm-hmm.
for them. So how do you support the person? Well, you can enable them, and you help them that it's not a stigma, because if you won't talk about it and you can't, then they're not going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So helping that person get help, whatever it be. I mean, some people do very well in, you know, AA or NA or a support group, something. But that's key to having. And like Riley said, Riley was so, this was so big in what he talked about, was that social, about helping others. Because when you're an addict or mental health, and you're so, it becomes focused on yourself. When you go out and you help others and you tell your story, which helps others, you know, how many people, you know, Chrissy, we go to that conference and they tell their story.
Yep.
Now they're advocates and they're, you know, that's healing for them too. So in addiction, that's the same thing as mental health. You tell your story, that keeps you accountable. Not that
yep.
you're not going to, not that you're not going to, you know, relapse again, but you pick yourself up. And if you have a good support group and you have, and you've told your story,
mm-hmm.
you know, be there for those people. They don't want to relapse.
Yeah.
That's not something they want.
Right.
And it hurts for them to do it. And they feel horrible that that's happened. So you know what? Support them.
And that's a great way to end. We have about 60 seconds left, but that's the perfect message, I think, for us to leave with, Margaret, is just for individuals that suffer with addiction or support system, please start talking. Please start telling your story. Because if I've learned anything through this advocacy, I could stand up in front of 50 people, 49 of them may dismiss everything I say, and they don't really care. They're going to walk away and still think the same about mental health. But one person could come up to me and say, you know what, thank you for that. I will think differently from now on. I will advocate from now on. The story is so powerful. We have about 20 seconds left, Margaret. Any final words?
No, and I reiterate what you say, Chrissy, because when you tell your story and the 59 that don't, listen, but the one that does, you've changed their life, and then they go out and change somebody else's. So it's a trickle down effect. And I watched Riley do that. I watched you do it.
I think we just ran out of time.
Okay.
But I think we ran out of time right when you said trickle down effect. So that was perfect.
Okay. Good. Yeah, see, I know that's a topic I can go on and on about. So that was a good one for this morning.
I think we got a ton of, I wrote down a lot of the stuff that we said, so I think we pretty much have the next three shows down.
Okay. Good.
So then the next one, what I'm going to do is I will.
If you can get, can you get, your friend George, or George the George from
Let's get George
Macon.
Brock to come on.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Let him come on with us.
I'm going to, actually what I'll do is I'm going to talk to him and I'll see if he'll come on for at first, like for like a one-on-one interview and then I'll just have him stay on. And then when you come on, then we'll just open up the discussion for all three of us. Let's do that next time.
Yes. Okay. That'd be great. That'd be great.
Cool.
Good topic.
Okay. I'm going to end the episode. I don't think it's still recording us, but if it is, hello everyone. It doesn't stay on air, so I think it's good. But I'm going to end the episode, so it's going to hang us up. So,
okay.
But I'll send you the link.
We'll be in touch.
Yeah, I'll send you the link, and, you know, let's just post it wherever and get the word
out.
Great.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Okay, love you.
Bye. Love you, too.
Bye.
Bye.